Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Time now for the Brian Barrett Show on EEI.
How beneficial was this time off for your knee? And how confident are you that with a pretty compact schedule of games, you'll be able to be at your best throughout the schedule in the bubble?
Yeah, it was super important for me. I really needed that break. It definitely helped me, you know, get back to myself and, you know, start to feel comfortable, you know, on my knee. You know, it was a very unfortunate time, but it was in my best interest for sure. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable with the way the schedule is, and I'm just going to keep on taking care of myself. That's really all I can do. So I'm just going to stay on top of things and, you know, take it day by day.
All right, so that was Kemba Walker at the beginning of the month. Said he needed the time for his knee to recover. And you felt good when Kemba said that, but apparently that's not the case whatsoever, because Brad Stevens said today, for the third consecutive practice, Kemba Walker did not participate. And this is after we heard on Monday, well, you know what, Kemba is going to be a go on Wednesday. We found out he did his own personal workout on Tuesday, and he's going to go every other day. He can't practice on back-to-back days. This is now becoming a real problem. And I was thinking about this, and I know that we've been spoiled as New England sports fans over the past 20 years especially, right? And especially my generation. I watched the Red Sox win 4 World Series. And by the way, what a weird organization. Has any organization had that much dysfunction and won that often? Think about it. 3 different managers that have won World Series for the Red Sox. It's crazy. But anyway, the Pats, 6 Super Bowls in the past 20 years, the B's and the C's, each one. Best era ever, right, for Boston sports. But man, I got to tell you, this Celtics team, being a Celtics fan, it's getting aggravating, to get invested in them just because you feel like you've been getting shortchanged. And it's not even their fault, right? So, I mean, the 90s were their fault. When I started watching the Celtics in the 90s, they sucked, and you had the Patino era, which in a weird way was entertaining for different reasons, like Larry Bird's not walking through that door, etc. But you missed on Duncan, which that felt like a gut punch at the time. But then a couple of years later, you had that nice run with Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce to the conference championship, and that was entertaining. And then they trade Antoine away, and they suck for a while. And at one point, Paul Pierce wants a trade, who was like the only good thing that was happening for the Celtics. But then in 07, the lottery doesn't work out for them. But you get Garnett and Ray Allen. It's like, awesome. Okay, finally. It's been forever that the Celtics have been good. You get Kevin Garnett, one of the best, at that time, 5 players in the NBA to go along with Paul Pierce and Ray Allen, unbelievable shooter, right? And in 08, you win the title. And for an organization that was struggling for a number of years, it's finally, the Celtics are going to be good for a long time. And then after that, the Celtics were just snake-bitten again. 09, the Celtics, in my mind, were better than they were the previous season. And then what happens? Oh, yeah. KG goes down with a knee injury, and he's never the same player again. So, of course, 09, you're better, and you don't have your best player for the entire 2009 postseason run. Remember, that's the year that the Orlando Magic went to the NBA Finals, so you don't get to actually defend your NBA championship. And Kevin Garnett, after that, not the same player. So you really got about 1.5 good years out of Kevin Garnett. Not to say you wouldn't do that move again, because you got an NBA championship and banners fly forever, right? Flags fly forever. So you do it again in a heartbeat, but it kind of sucked. You only got 1.5 good years out of Kevin Garnett. But then in 2010, even though Kevin Garnett's not the same player, Rondo starts to emerge, and you get back to the NBA Finals. And Perk goes down with that torn ACL in game 6 against the Lakers. And then you lose game 7. I still can't watch that game 7 again. Ron Artest, come on, give me a break. Then in 2012, you're up 3-2 against the Miami Heat. And I really felt, and I believe most of you felt at that point, okay, LeBron just can't do it, right? He's coming into the Garden game 6, and then LeBron puts up 45, and the Heat win that, and that's really the end of the Big 3 era. Now, the next year, they have Jason Terry on that 13 team. They lose to the Knicks, which is like the only Knicks playoff series win this century. So you knew it was done at that particular point in time. But then you rebuild in 2018. You have a great run with the kids, with Tatum and with Brown, and Horford was on the team at that time. But remember, you had no Kyrie and no Gordon. And that's before Kyrie just completely went insane. Completely went insane after that. But you would have thought the first year with Kyrie, all right, it was like the honeymoon period, but then the next year obviously sucked. But then in 19, we all know what happened last year. You were a complete mess. And so really, ever since the Celtics won that OA championship, it's been more of the same. High expectations for the team, and a key injury happens. Whether it be Kevin Garnett in 09, whether it be Kendrick Perkins in 2010, whether it be in 2018 with no Kyrie and no Gordon Hayward, that's what's been happening to this organization year after year after year. And it just feels to me that the same crap is going to happen again this year to the Celtics as they get ready to go to the Orlando bubble. And I know it's a weird situation for everybody, but right now, don't feel good about the Celtics whatsoever. I know that the national media has given a tongue-bathing to the Celtics over the past couple of months, but right now, I'm more pessimistic than I've ever been in terms of the restart in the Orlando bubble for the Celtics, because it just feels like Kemba Walker, it's not going to work out this year in the postseason for him. And not to mention the fact that, let's also remember that Gordon Hayward at some point is going to miss a significant chunk of time, because Hayward's going to have to leave for the birth of his child. And I have no issue with that whatsoever. No issue with that whatsoever. But the problem being is when you come back, you got to quarantine when you get back to the bubble. And you have to have negative tests before you get back to the bubble. Then you have to have negative tests when you get in the bubble. There's a lot of negative tests you need in order to play. So in all likelihood, if Gordon Hayward leaves like after game 1 of a series, you're going to miss the rest of the series. Or if he leaves in game 4, say hypothetically, of an Eastern Conference semifinals, and somehow the Celtics still hold on to win, well, then he's going to miss half the Eastern Conference finals against the Milwaukee Bucks. So that element of Gordon Hayward missing, and now this whole situation with Kemba Walker, I just have no faith. This team is going to be snake-bitten once again, like they have been ever since they won the championship in 2008. When I look at Kemba Walker, I don't know how any Celtics fan can't tell me they're completely concerned about this right now. And the fact that Brad Stevens can go up and do these Zoom calls, whatever they are now, I don't even know what you call the media availability, and say, yeah, we're good, we're good. I get it. He's putting on a brave face, etc. But there's no way that the Celtics actually believe this guy's going to make it to the finish line. I don't know how they could. I don't know how they could. He had 4 months. 4 months to rest this knee. He told you 2 weeks ago that he thought the rest was going to help him. Clearly, it didn't. He's having the same issues that he had earlier on in the season. I made the comparison before. This is starting to remind me of Chris Sale, where Chris Sale last year was dealing with something basically the whole season. And remember, the year prior, he had the shoulder issue. He comes back last year, not the same pitcher, had a 4.40 ERA. And then he ends up going on the injured list, and we say, hey, nothing to see here, no big deal. He goes and he talks to Dr. James Andrews. They say the MRI comes back clean. No, he's not going to need Tommy John. He's good. He's good to go. Okay, so then we get into spring training this year, and what happens? Chris Sale throws like 30 pitches, and then, oh, he didn't respond well. He's not going to be ready for his next session. Okay. A couple days later, after the COVID-19 pandemic occurs, yeah, Chris Sale needs Tommy John. Oh, okay. So nothing to see here, right? Same type of crap with Kemba Walker. It just feels like we're heading in this direction with Kemba, because what else could they possibly try as it pertains to this knee? And remember, Kemba Walker has had this knee operated on 3 different times. In 15, he had arthroscopic surgery. In 16, he had arthroscopic surgery. In 15, he had meniscus surgery. In 16, he had meniscus surgery. And in 17, he had arthroscopic surgery. So 2 meniscus repairs and arthroscopic surgery on the knee. So he's had 3 different procedures on that knee. And he was relatively healthy his final 2 years in Charlotte. By the way, he only missed 2 games over his final 2 seasons in Charlotte, playing for essentially nothing there. But he's playing like 34 minutes a game in Charlotte, and he's missing only 2 games. during that stretch of time. That's a lot of mileage on a knee that had been operated on previously three different times. And then this year, you look at what's happened already. Remember, first what happened was he needed to take a break for his knee, and he missed a game against the Phoenix Suns. He gets an MRI. He was clean. All right, fine. Good. Let's go. But then when he comes back from the knee injury, 36 minutes he plays against the Magic, 38 minutes he plays against the Pelicans, 38 minutes against the Heat, and 31 minutes against the Warriors. What happens? Well, knee's bothering him again. Misses three more games. Not good. All right, so then he comes back right before the All-Star break. They limit him in terms of his minutes. But then they play the Clippers in his fourth game back, and they go to double overtime, and Kemba plays 46 minutes. Oh, okay. Then he goes and he plays 29 minutes in the All-Star game. And what happens after that? Oh, yeah, more issues with the knee. And this time, even worse, to the fact that he needs to get that knee injected and he needs to get it drained. So when he came back the last time, he wasn't good. Remember, four games back before COVID-19 suspended the NBA season, here were Kemba Walker's numbers. 15 points per game, 30% from the field, 25% from three-point territory. That's the last time he came back from the knee procedure. Now he's in the Orlando bubble after having 4 months off. Before that, they had a little tune-up where they practiced practice here locally. And after that, his knee didn't react well. So you're talking about just having team practices to reboot the season, and his knee couldn't even handle that. And now you're in the Orlando bubble, and he's missed three consecutive practices. How can anybody have any faith that this guy's knee is going to hold up for a postseason? We already know he can't go on back-to-back days right now. And I know when you get to the playoff portion, it's not going to be any back-to-backs, but we already know he can't play back-to-back days. He cannot play back-to-back days. Oh, we also know that Brad Stevens has acknowledged that he's going to be on a minutes restriction when you start this thing back up. They're trying everything they possibly can to get Kemba Walker's knee to the finish line. Reality of the situation is this. What have we learned? The three other times he injures his knee, he injures it again. It's not going to hold up for the entirety of a postseason run, and I'm really starting to get concerned about Kemba Walker in the long term as a member of the Celtics. Okay, so let's go to the long term after we acknowledge the short term. So I don't believe he's going to hold up this postseason, but even if he plays in a series, you don't think teams are going to smell blood? This guy's got a banged up knee. He continues to miss time. You're going to be matched up in the second round against the Toronto Raptors, who, oh, by the way, have a head coach in Nick Nurse. I don't know if you know anything about this guy, but he'll try anything. Nick Nurse tries a million different things. He tries a million different defenses. He'll do everything, whatever it takes to win. It's almost Belichickian, right? The way that he approaches a game. He approaches a game like an NFL coach does, like Belichick. 1 week the Patriots are one thing, the next week they're a different thing. That's what Nick Nurse does. He looks at the opponent and he says, hey, we're going to do this. During the regular season, what do you think he's going to do in the postseason? Oh, okay. The other team has a small diminutive point guard that is 6 foot nothing, and he has a banged up knee. Oh, okay. So, yeah, I think we'll target that guy when we have the ball. That's what they're going to do. They're going to do what LeBron James did for all those years in the postseason. He gets a small guard matched up on him, and he just plays bully ball. That's what the Raptors are going to do. They realize, oh, Kemba Walker has got a bulky knee. He's been injured a bunch of times at that knee. Okay, who is Kemba Walker? Who's getting guarded by Kemba Walker? Okay, you come up, set a pick, and Pascal Siakam, you're going to now get a switch, so Kemba Walker is going to be on you, so you get to take Kemba Walker to the bucket. So that's what's going to happen in the short term. He, at some point, is going to have to miss games during the postseason because of that knee. And then, secondly, the teams that they do play, the smart teams like the Raptors, they're going to take advantage of that knee for however long Kemba can hold up throughout this run here. And then the biggest part of this is the long-term ramifications. Because, look, even if you don't win a championship this year, which I don't expect the Celtics to win a championship, I've made that abundantly clear. I don't know why the national media has jumped all over the Celtics. You still got that Giannis guy in the Eastern Conference who's averaging 28 points per game. The Milwaukee Bucks are an absolute buzzsaw. You couldn't do anything with them last year. Well, Kyrie's not here. Okay, well, Kyrie is not going to. It's not like since Kyrie's not here, you have somebody that magically can cover Giannis. You don't have that in terms of this roster. You have nobody to match up with Giannis. You have nobody to protect the rim when Giannis gets into the paint anyway. So you're not beating the Bucks anyway. So, okay, yeah, you weren't going to win a championship anyway. But look at the long-term ramifications of this. Yeah, this season was a success because Jason Tatum emerged as the guy, a bona fide all-star, and emerging as a superstar in the NBA. Jaylen Brown took a massive step forward. So all that stuff is great. But you have Kemba Walker for 3 more years under contract after this. He's a small point guard. Those guys, that is, if you're a small point guard and your game's based on athleticism, those guys don't age particularly well. You can go through the list of guys Kemba Walker's size. They don't age well. The guys that age well at Kemba Walker's size, it's not the athletic type. It's the guy that his game is based on craft and his game is based on skill. Steve Nash, example of that, right? Steve Nash, great passer, great shooter. He can age well because of that. His game is not based on his burst. See, Kemba Walker, what Kemba Walker does great, and we've all witnessed it when he was actually healthy, is he blows by his defenders. Explosive first step. Kemba Walker is an incredible athlete, and he's incredible going by guys. But that type of player does not age well. Small, diminutive point guard. Stevie Francis was done really, really quickly. Okay, the original Isaiah Thomas, torn Achilles, never the same guy. The Isaiah Thomas we all saw and loved here, ended up with a hip injury. Did not age particularly well. Allen Iverson did not age particularly well. Small, diminutive guards that their game is predicated on their athleticism and their explosiveness, they don't age well, and I'm really concerned about Kemba because we're in year one of this contract. He has 3 more years remaining on this deal. How can you trust that knee going forward? Once the knees start to go, they start to go. Think about Dwayne Wade, and Dwayne Wade was a bigger guard, right? 6'3", but he had a massive wingspan. Once Dwayne Wade started having knee issues in the last decade, really the second year that LeBron got there, still was able to have that really good year with LeBron where they won a championship. But even in the second championship run, Dwayne Wade was not the same player anymore, and his knees started to go. And Dwayne Wade only had 1 meniscus surgery. Kemba Walker had 2 of them. Kemba Walker had 2 of them. So once that knee starts to go, you're in real trouble. So I hate to say it, but this contract that Danny Ainge gave Kemba Walker, it's going to start to look really bad, and it's going to start to look bad this year. Because if you think he's not going to have knee issues going forward, you're crazy. I guarantee you that after this ends, this restart, whatever you want to call it, the playoffs in the NBA, the Orlando bubble, there's going to be a situation where Kemba Walker has another procedure on his knee this offseason. I'm telling you, he's going to have another procedure on his knee this offseason. They're going to need to do something else with Kemba's knee because clearly they don't have a plan for how they can keep this guy healthy. You thought 4 months would help out. Kemba thought 4 months would help out. He acknowledged the fact that, hey, yeah, I needed that rest. I needed my knee to get better because before that, he was averaging 15 points per game. When he came back, he wasn't the same player. But even that didn't give him time. So that's essentially the equivalent of an offseason in the NBA. He had a whole offseason for his knee to recover. Didn't work out. What does that mean? Clearly, the guy's going to need to have some sort of procedure on his knee. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. I do want to get to this. The NFL is going to be very, very mad with one player. And specifically, one position group is going to be really angry with one player. We'll do that next on WEI, and we'll get you trending in just a second here.
Right back to it. This is Brian Barrett on EEI.
Before we get started, I just want to introduce y'all. We got the NFL rushing leader. If anybody got a problem with that, you come see me. We bout that. Big trust. Woo woo. King Henry in the flesh. Woo woo.
Oh, what goes around comes around. That was Tajay Sharpe, who was basically imitating Mark Ingram when he introduced Lamar Jackson after a game. And that's when, so then he mocked him. And that was when the Titans beat the Ravens in the divisional round of the playoffs after wild card weekend. The Patriots lost to the Titans as well. That's when Derrick Henry was running all over everybody, not just the Patriots, but the Baltimore Ravens as well. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. The number 617-779-7937. So I bring up Derrick Henry because he signed this extension today. 4 years, $50 million. $25 million of that is guaranteed. And if you're another running back in the NFL that hasn't got paid yet, you're going to be irate that he actually agreed to this contract, right? Because he has led the league in rushing the past 2 seasons. Now, in my mind, Christian McCaffrey is the best back in the NFL because he can do everything. But he took significantly less money than Christian McCaffrey. If you look at the annual average value, he's at 12.5, so that's less than McCaffrey, who's at 16. Way less than McCaffrey, 3.5 mil less. Elliott's at 15. Le'Veon Bell is at 13.1. David Johnson's at 13. So he's making less money on an average annual basis, if you will, than all those guys. He gets $25 million in guaranteed, which is $25 million less than Zeke. $25 million less than Zeke, $11 million less than McCaffrey, and $10 million less than Le'Veon Bell. So if you're Kamara, if you're Saquon Barkley, if you're Nick Chubb, if you're Dalvin Cook, oh man, you are pissed off about this because, see, this contract is going to be used against you. When you go to the negotiating table, your team is going to use Derrick Henry's contract against you to say, yeah, not going to pay you that much. Look what Derrick Henry agreed to. And I don't blame Derrick Henry. I don't believe he had much leverage in this. First of all, you have everything going on with COVID-19, so you don't know what the salary cap's going to look in the future. But more importantly with Derrick Henry, you don't know how much longer your NFL career is going to last if you're a running back in this league. So I went back to, you realize his final year in college, how many times he ran? 395 attempts. His final year of college. I remember there was a game, I believe it was Auburn, where he had like he ran for over 400 yards, I believe, in the game. And I believe he had over 40 rushing attempts. And maybe I slightly exaggerate with the 400 yards, but I believe he had over 40 rushing attempts. Last year, including the playoffs, he had 386 carries. And this is such a unique position where really think about how crazy this is. And it makes total sense if you think about it. But so say hypothetically you're a quarterback, right? Like Dak Prescott. So Dak Prescott is now in a situation where he's playing on the franchise tag. If he goes out there and he has this insane season, the Cowboys go 12-4, and he's in the MVP conversation. I'm not predicting that happens, but let's just say that's the hypothetical. He's in the MVP conversation. He's playing great. Completion percentage is there. Quarterback ratings there. Everything, right? So when he goes to the negotiating table next year, he says, I just had this incredible season. And the Cowboys are like, oh, yeah, maybe now we give him the extension, right? So by having a great season, Dak Prescott actually gets more power at the negotiating table. That's kind of how it works, right? It actually would work the opposite for Derrick Henry. So if Derrick Henry went out there next year and he played on the franchise tag, which was about $10 million, I believe, close to $11 million, maybe somewhere in that $10 to $11 million range, that's what he was scheduled to make. If he goes out there and he has this great season and he leads the league in rushing again, and he runs the ball over 300 times like he did last year, you realize the team would use that against him, right? That's what the team would do. They would say, yeah, well, you're going to be 27 going into the 2021 season. And now you've had back-to-back seasons where you've run the ball over 300 times. Think about how messed up that is. But that's what I would do if I was a GM as well. Think about how messed up that is. So you could have this unbelievable season where you lead the league in rushing for the third consecutive year. And your team would say, see, we're actually going to use that against you. The fact that you ran it 300 times again, that's actually not a reason for us to give you more money. That's actually a reason for us to give you less money. So I totally understand why Derrick Henry caved and he took this contract. If you're a running back in this league, you know that in all likelihood, now Adrian Peterson's the outlier who got two big contracts, but in all likelihood, you get one chance if you're a running back to get a big deal. And by a big deal for Derrick Henry, it was $50 million, $25 million of which is guaranteed. You may not get that opportunity. If you play next year and you're banged up, say you only play in 12 games or maybe you play in 11 games, you get some sort of issue going on, you're not going to get that contract that you got this year. So this may be your best offer. So what are you going to do? You're going to play on the franchise tag and go through the same crap next year? I can totally understand why Derrick Henry said, you know what, I'm just going to sign the deal, screw it. $50 million, that's life-changing money. And even if I just get the guaranteed, which is $25 million in terms of guaranteed money, even if I just get that, life-changing money for me, I may not get the opportunity to sign a contract like this again if I get some sort of injury next season, so I might as well just take it. That's where the running back position is in the NFL. But, I mean, if you're Dalvin Cook, who's been trying to negotiate with the Vikings, you're like, what the hell, man? Dude, you just led the league in rushing, and you took a hometown discount? Why? Now I'm going to have to take a hometown discount. If I'm Alvin Kamara, I'm like, dude, what are you doing, man? I wanted a big long-term contract extension, and you're screwing me over. So the rest of the running backs around the league got to be pissed off at this. Now, the guys that already get paid, they don't care. But there's also, if you look at it, there's really no reason to pay these guys in terms of running backs because Derrick Henry's a great player. Christian McCaffrey's a great player. Delvin Cook's a great player. Zeke's a great player, right? Delvin Cook and all these guys. They're all great players. Nobody would dispute they're great at their position. But it's just not worth paying that position because you can get a guy in the fourth round of the draft or you can get a free agent that played for a different team. and you can win a Super Bowl without a great player at that position. That's how it works. Hey, just look at recent history. Okay, the Chiefs just won the Super Bowl. The guy on their roster in terms of the running back position that had the largest salary cap hit was LeSean McCoy at $3 million. And by the way, he was a healthy scratch for the Super Bowl. Damian Williams ended up being their main running back at the end of the year. The Patriots in 18. Sony Michel in a rookie deal was a $1.7 million cap hit. James White was a $3 million cap hit. And Burkhead was around $3 million. That's all they were paying to their running backs. Not to say that those guys all don't do something great. Like, Sony was really good in 18, although I believe I could have run through some of those holes. James White, we all know, is insane catching the ball out of the backfield. He could have been the MVP of the Super Bowl against the Falcons. And Burkhead played a pivotal role during the playoffs. He was good against the Chiefs. The Eagles in 17, LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi. Neither one of those guys was making a whole lot of money. 16, Blount and James White for the Patriots. Broncos in 15, C.J. Anderson was making nothing. He was their main back. And in 14, you look at Blount and Shane Vereen were the main running backs for the Patriots. So the point being, this position right now is really not worth investing a whole lot of money in those guys. Think about the best running backs in the NFL. How many of those guys are actually on contenders right now? Okay, Saquon Barkley, is he on a contender? No. Alvin Kamara, that's the one guy. Zeke, are they a fringy contender, the Cowboys? Yeah, I know they have a really good roster, but they haven't done a whole lot of winning when it comes to the postseason with Dak and Zeke. They've won one playoff game together. Okay, so the two guys that are on contenders, sort of, Alvin Kamara with the Saints and Zeke with the Cowboys. But why are the Saints contenders? Well, because they have Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, not because of Alvin Kamara. I would say that Christian McCaffrey is the best running back in the NFL right now. And he's on the Carolina Panthers, who are going to be one of the 10 worst teams in the NFL. Maybe they make a little bit of an improvement with a new coach in there in Matt Rhule. And obviously, Teddy Bridgewater is an upgrade over Kyle Allen because that's who their quarterback was for the majority of last season. So when you look at it from that perspective, the quarterback play will get a little bit better, but the Carolina Panthers aren't sniffing the postseason. You start to think about some of the other guys around the league. Okay, the Titans, they're pretty good, but they're not the Ravens, and they're definitely not the Kansas City Chiefs. Nick Chubb with the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, outstanding player. No doubt about it. That guy's a really good player. But here's the problem for Nick Chubb. Baker Mayfield's the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. So all these premier running backs across the sport, the majority of them play on mediocre to bad football teams. That's just where the position's at right now. So it's not worth investing a whole lot of money in that type of player. That's just where the league is right now. And it's unfortunate because if you look around the sport in terms of the salary cap, quarterback salaries keep going up, right? They keep going up. Like Pat Mahomes, he just signed for almost $500 million. Each and every year, that price goes up for the quarterback position. Heck, Dak Prescott's pissed that he's playing for $31 million. Think about that. That's where we're at the quarterback position. The wide receiver position keep getting bigger deals, right? We just saw the contract that Michael Thomas signed, which was, what, $20 million per year. So the price for that guy keeps going up in terms of the receiver. You look at pass rushers. Myles Garrett, who, oh, by the way, hit Mason Rudolph with his helmet. Mason Rudolph's helmet, I should say. He just got, what, $125 million. He's a pass rusher, a premier pass rusher in the NFL. He got that type of contract. So the pass rushers' numbers are going up. Cornerbacks are going up. We just saw what Stephon Gilmore got a couple of years ago, and we just saw what Byron Jones got in terms of the big contract he just signed with the Miami Dolphins. So literally every position in the NFL, even guards, Joe Tooney's getting $14 million on the franchise tag. Every position in the league, every position in the league, the price is going up, except the running backs has basically plateaued. Adrian Peterson had like the last big contract until Zeke got one. Zeke got $90 million. None of these other guys are getting close to that type of money. None of them are getting close to that type of money. And Zeke benefits because he plays with an organization and Jerry Jones is there. That's the reason he gets that type of contract, right? So you just look at it. I mean, I feel bad for these guys. I do. I mean, they get worked the hardest. And think about this. You're a running back. You know every single play, you're taking a hit. Every single play, you're taking a hit. If you're running the ball, you are getting hit. I guess 9 times out of 10, because sometimes you run out of bounds, sometimes you run into the end zone, you don't get hit, but even sometimes when you get a touchdown, you get it. So you get the worst position. Like, you get hit every time you touch the ball, and you know that you only have one chance to get paid in the league in terms of a big long-term contract. You get one opportunity. That's it. I mean, I feel awful for these guys. I feel terrible for these guys. Now, one other thing in terms of around the NFL notes, I've alluded to this multiple times, Dak Prescott, he's going to be playing on the franchise tag. My theory on that is this. Everybody keeps blaming, and I've heard it the past day or two, whether it's Stephen A. Smith, whether it's Mike Greenberg, everybody keeps pointing at Jerry Jones and say, Jerry Jones, you should have paid him. You should have paid him. And comparing him to Tony Romo. And by the way, I heard today on First Take, Molly Quorum, Quorum, however you say her last name, Jalen, Molly Quorum Rose, I think that's how you say her full name. She's Jalen Rose's wife. She hosts First Take with Stephen A. and Max Kellerman. She said, well, Dak had the same QBR as Tony Romo did when he got his mega contract. Well, yeah, Tony Romo got his mega contract in like 06, 07. You're comparing quarterback rating from then or QBR from then to now. It's totally different. Look at the passing yards now. Look at the completion percentage now to even what they were last decade. And look at the guys like in the 90s and the 80s. Totally different to compare even from 10 years ago in the NFL. Even the rules have changed more. So it's an unfair comparison. But more importantly, when you look at it with Dak Prescott, the bigger point I wanted to make here is maybe it's not Jerry Jones. See, everybody's pointing at Jerry Jones in terms of, well, the Cowboys should be paying him. They paid Tony Romo. You should be paying Dak Prescott. Hey, he looks like a franchise guy. You should pay him. Maybe Jerry is asking his coach, Mike McCarthy, and Mike McCarthy's the new coach that they just gave a lot of money to get this organization back to where it should be, competing at a high level. Maybe Mike McCarthy's thinking to himself, hold on. I coach Brett Favre, one of the most talented players in the history of the quarterback position in terms of pure talent. The guy won three MVPs in a row. He was ridiculous, right? Then I coached Aaron Rodgers, who before Mahomes came around, everybody was calling Rodgers the most talented quarterback of all time. So he's coached two of the five most talented guys to ever play the position. You throw Mahomes in the conversation, right? But they're up there in terms of the most talented quarterbacks ever. And then he's like, yeah, Jerry, I'm not sure about that guy. Not sure about this Dak kid. Okay, I don't know if I want to give this guy a whole lot of money. I've seen what a great quarterback looks like. Let's give him a year. Okay, let's play him on the... Yeah, let's give him a year. If he looks good on the franchise tag, then we'll have the conversation next year. But if you're Mike McCarthy, you're considered to be this quarterback guru, right? I feel like we have too much quarterback whisperers around the league. But if you're Mike McCarthy, you may say, yeah, that Dak guy, I think we may be able to do better. So maybe it's not Jerry Jones that everybody should be blaming for not having his quarterback signed. Maybe it's actually Mike McCarthy. And maybe Mike McCarthy's actually doing the smart thing. All right, a lot more to get into, including this. I've never been a supporter of snitching or tattletaling, if you will. But I believe we need to make an exception to that rule. I'll tell you why next, right here on WEI.
We're right back to what you want to hear. More of Brian Barrett on EEI.
All right, well, the NBA bubble, they're having some issues there. Some guys are violating protocol. They're leaving the bubble. So Rudy Gobert was asked if he would call the snitch hotline, the tip line is what it's called, for when players ended up going outside the bubble, if he'd ever use it. He said this, quote, I don't know if someone's going to use it, but I think it's sort of petty. At the same time, you want to make sure people respect the rules. So first of all, the word petty as it pertains to the tip line probably isn't wise for Rudy Gobert to be the one saying it, considering the fact that this guy basically mocked the coronavirus when it first started. Remember, the NBA, when we were getting close to the pandemic, before that, they were taking precautions. You had teams in California like the Warriors saying, hey, we're going to have no fans at our games. But one of the things the NBA did is they said, hey, we're going to have the reporters 6 feet away from the players, and kind of like a movie theater, they roped off where the players were. And what did Rudy Gobert do? He touched everybody's recorder and touched everybody's microphone, basically saying this thing's a joke, talking about the coronavirus, essentially. And then he ended up with COVID-19. So Rudy Gobert probably should not be the guy saying, yeah, we shouldn't use the tip line. But anyway, I did want to get to this tip line scenario. So he says he doesn't know if anybody's going to use the tip line. It's already been used. Shams Charania from The Athletic tweeted last night, quote, multiple tips have been placed into the NBA's anonymous hotline to report protocol violations on campus. So this is already happening. And by the way, everybody thinks it's Chris Paul. Everybody thinks it's Chris Paul. And by the way, you already had Rashawn Holmes of the Sacramento Kings. He went outside the bubble when he had to quarantine again. He had like an Uber Eats situation, I believe it was. He had a delivery person coming there. and Rashawn Holmes actually went out there, and he went over, he left the bubble. He left the bubble, so he had to quarantine for 10 more days, I believe it was. You also had Bruno Caboclo of the Houston Rockets. He violated the quarantine rules. So when you first get to the bubble, you have to be in your hotel room, and you have to have two negative tests, and they have to be at least 24 hours apart before you can leave your hotel room. So what happened to Bruno Caboclo is he left his room, so he had to re-quarantine again. So you've already had some issues in terms of guys leaving the bubble or leaving their room. So ordinarily, and I remember my father told me this when I was a kid, hey, don't tattletale, don't do any of that, okay? So when I was a kid, my dad, this is something he enforced to me, so I never told on anyone. When I was in school, I remember my dad, just one thing he got instilled in me, don't ever tell on somebody. So I never told on anybody in school if they did anything, they caused any trouble. And I always looked down upon people that were tattletales in school. I'm like, really? You're going to do this? Because, you know, when you're a kid, you're thinking your dad tells you not to do something. If somebody keeps doing it, that's an issue, right? So I've never been one to tattletale or snitch. But I'm telling you, these guys leaving the bubble right now, exception to the rule. I have no issue with any NBA player that wants to snitch on another NBA player for leaving the Orlando bubble. There's too much at stake, man. Think about this. The NBA players have already lost $300 million. They've already lost that. Yeah, they've already lost that. So you don't want guys leaving for food or to hang out with some chick, and then they violate the bubble rules, if you will. They come back with COVID-19 when they're in a hot spot already, right? They're in a hot spot. So you're going to lose the integrity of the bubble if you leave. You go out to this hotspot, you bring it back, and you could be spreading the coronavirus like crazy if you come back into the bubble. But think about this. If you're LeBron and the Lakers, you're Kawhi and the Clippers, Giannis and the Bucks, heck, we'll even throw the Celtics and Jason Tatum in there. Do you want some guys from the Sacramento Kings or the Phoenix Suns or the Wizards ruining your chances at winning an NBA championship? Because
my job is to protect the integrity of the game.
Thank you, Roger. Do you want those guys? Okay, those guys on these crappy teams, the Spurs, the Kings, the Suns, the Wizards, do you want the Nets? You want them ruining this for you? Where these guys just go out of the bubble like crazy, and then all of a sudden, more guys end up getting COVID-19 within the bubble, and then you got to halt the playoffs. See, if I'm a contender, I got to be on the lookout for these guys. Like, no, no, no. You're LeBron James. You're trying to ultimately catch Michael Jordan. I don't think you're going to do it. But that's what you're trying to do, right? You want to try to catch Michael Jordan. You don't want guys leaving the bubble and having this thing blow up in your face and not being able to finish. So I'm all for tattletaling and snitching in this particular case. I am making an exception to my rule of never tattletale. You got to do it in this case. And by the way, everybody thinks it's already Chris Paul. And I don't blame Chris Paul. Chris Paul is the president of the Players Association. He came up with a plan with Adam Silver and the league. Him and Michelle Roberts, who is in charge of the players union, they came up with a plan, okay? And unfortunately, it's not what NBA players are used to. They're not used to living in this bubble, although it looks pretty cool. You can fish, you can play golf. There's a lot of things to do there. There's a lot of activities there, okay, as Will Ferrell would say in Step Brothers. So you got a lot of options out there. If you're Chris Paul, you don't want this thing to fail. There's a lot of money at stake for both sides. So guys, come on. Just stay in the bubble. Okay, stay in the bubble, especially your crappy teams are going to be out of there in 8 days anyway. Don't ruin for everybody else if you're in the Kings, who you aren't making the playoffs, the Spurs, who aren't making the playoffs, the Suns, who aren't making the playoffs, and the Wizards. Don't ruin it for everybody else. We all want basketball. We need sports back in our lives. These guys are trying to win championships, add to their legacy. So snitch all you want if these guys are leaving the bubble. I guarantee you we'll have a similar situation in the NHL in the next couple of days if we hear about guys leaving the bubble. Just stay in the damn bubble, people, okay? All right, I'll be back with you tomorrow night, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Thanks to Nick LaPan for producing. Have a great rest of your night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.